This is the Catholic Money Mastermind podcast, the show where we explore the intersection of our faith and finances. You can learn more about our organization at CatholicFinancialPlanners.com. Please note that nothing in this episode should be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice.
Hello and welcome, everybody. It's great to have you on the show again today. Thanks for joining us on Catholic Money Mastermind. I'm your host, Ben Martinek, with the Catholic Financial Planners Network, and I'm joined here today by one of the members on the Catholic Financial Planners Network, hopefully a friendly face for everyone who's tuning in. We've had him on the show before, Michael Acosta. Mike, why don't you say hi?
Hey, Ben, how's it going? Hey, everybody who's listening. It's great to be back. Love being on the show.
That's awesome. Mike, last time we had a show together, we really rocked it. I loved everything we had to talk about. Although I must say, I don't know if it was on student loans. Is that what we talked about, or did we talk about something else? We normally talk about student loans.
So we've done student loans in the past. I believe the most recent one was on goal planning and just preparing for the year about a year ago, right? So it's actually pretty relevant for anyone who didn't get a chance to listen to it. Go back through the history of the Catholic Money Mastermind podcast and see if you can find it.
Awesome. Yeah. So let's kick you back over to the goal setting, always relevant at the top of the year. But our topic of today, which I think is super fascinating and equally relevant, is this decision or question of homeownership. And when should you rent? When should you buy? And, you know, is now maybe a good time to own a home? So there's three questions we're wanting to go over, and I'm going to go just touch upon them for the audience, and we'll work through it in today's call. One is just the question of, is renting bad? Like, should you always avoid renting? Like, are you just losing money if you rent? So we want to spend some time just evaluating that question in its own right. The second question we'd like to look into is, well, is home ownership a good investment? Should we be checking it at the box as an investment in your portfolio? And then three, the question is, now a good time to own a home? Should you move forward with it, or should you continue to rent? We've got a great calculator, but we'll walk you through the highlights of that. I think will help give some concreteness to that question and help you make a decision. So maybe as we get going, Mike, we haven't talked about this much, so I'm kind of curious to what you have to say, but what are your thoughts? Is renting good? Is it bad? When should someone rent?
That's actually the million-dollar question, right? And it comes up so frequently, especially in client engagements, just based on where they're at in life. And, you know, I think the response is going to be more behavioral finance, or even psychological, really, because financial planning is more of an art than a science. Every advisor has a different philosophy, right? But in my opinion, I don't think you can go wrong with either option, depending on the ultimate goals and objectives of the individual, right? And so what I mean by that, to just peel that onion a little bit further, is that if I'm wanting to purchase a home today, I know that, one, I'm going to be paying what would be recently relevant higher interest rates, and home prices are going to be relatively static and at a higher price than where they were 2-3 years ago, just because there's this supply and demand struggle taking place, which is just keeping home prices at bay, if not consistently growing at a relative rate. I already know I'm paying a premium, but if I'm only planning on living in the home for 1 year, I'm probably not going to break even on my cost of what's going into the home from a down payment perspective, as well as any other additional closing costs, right? Just for completing that transaction. So what we traditionally see, and again, these are all generalizations, okay, is that your break-even point is really, as far as being able to recapture what you're putting into the purchase of the home, isn't going to be any earlier than maybe 3 to 4, maybe even 5 years of home ownership. So for individuals or families who are like, hey, you know, we want to buy a home because we're tired of renting, we're tired of having to change locations every 12 plus months, wanting to grow our family, running out of space, you know, you really need to sit down and think, well, what is my plan over the course of the next 3 to 5 years? Am I going to live in this home for that period of time? If not, if it's a shorter time frame, may not make sense to own a home unless, and there's an asterisk here, unless you're potentially looking at it as an investment opportunity. I have clients who purchased their first home, and within 12 to 16 months, they're being offered a great job opportunity that's going to require them to relocate. And so then we have that conversation from a planning perspective, and we say, okay, well, what are the opportunity costs here, right? Do we need the equity that's in the home right now as a way to then pour into the next home in your new location? Are you being offered a relocation bonus? Is there a signing bonus? Can that be leveraged for the down payment and the moving expenses for the new home in the new location while still maintaining the prior home? Do you have aspirations of being a landlord and having tenants, right? These are all considerations that come up that a technical analysis doesn't necessarily just spit out on its own, right? There's a lot of variables here that have to be taken into consideration. And some of it is behavioral and psychological.
Yeah, I think that's a good response on that question. Should you eventually convert your home or a primary residence into a rental property? And is that a good use of that money? Or should you let sell the property and carry that into the next home purchase? But what I am kind of curious, Mike, is just more the question of like renting itself, like not just renting a home, but like renting anything, maybe renting a car through leasing or having a rental car even, or renting tools, renting various equipment. You know, at what point would you say, hey, it's better just to buy this thing than to incur the rental fees? Because the problem with renting, right, is like, well, I spend this money, but I get the use out of it, but then I have to give the thing back. Like, I don't get to keep it. When's it worth keeping it? Usually you pay a little more to keep it versus being like, I'm just going to give it back. I don't want to keep this. Yeah. I have a question in mind, but I'm curious to know what your thoughts are. Is what's that deciding element?
Yeah. So home ownership's not for everyone, right? Some people love to rent. Why? Because it gives them the flexibility and freedom to just get up and go. There's also, in many instances, less maintenance costs, right? Because once you own it, it's yours. Like, you have to take care of it. You have to maintain it. Now, there's various forms of ownership, living in a single family home with, without HOAs. Some HOAs provide more than others, and then you take in the cost of that, right? So I would say, you know, renting can be beneficial for those who want the flexibility of new location, right? Think of leasing a car, right? Most people who are going to lease a car are someone who's flipping their car style or year or upgrading it every couple of years versus someone who wants to own it, truly own it, and take the time to maintain it long-term over an extended period of time. So I think one variable or factor that comes into play that's not psychological is or behavioral is the time horizon, the time frame, right? Which goes back to that break-even point. How long are you planning on owning this, living in this, partaking in this, right? And then do you want the ongoing maintenance that comes along with it? And then lastly, what's the hurdle rate of the cost of you paying into this? And so one example would be like a mortgage rate, right? Or some sort of interest rate on the lease. Could you pour that into, going back to a mortgage, could you pour whatever your rent is into a mortgage based on what the mortgage rate is? And that provides you a better return on investment versus you paying a rent with excess cash because your payment might be a little bit lower, but you're able to generate a higher return in the stock market with the difference. So that's where you can run a net opportunity cost analysis and get really technical for clients.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that's the issue. Normally when you're renting, right, you pay less for the item in play because ultimately if you paid the same amount, it'd be like, why wouldn't I just buy it? It would be better off buying it, except for maybe the question of management and maintenance and everything that goes into it. It's like, if it's the same cost to me, I might as well just buy it. Maybe a little bit to that point, and specific to homes, things do break down and now you are responsible for it if you do own it. Home properties don't always go up. So even if it is the same cost, let's say rental payment is the same as your mortgage payment, you know, I wouldn't be like, well, that's the same, you know, it's an apples and apples comparison here. There are things that you're picking up between ownership versus rent. But I think the deciding factor in all this, not just with homeowners, but just anytime you're faced with the question of renting is how long am I going to use this? And am I going to use it quite a bit? And am I going to use it over and over again? And, you know, do I have the means and can I afford spending a little more to buy it? And then ultimately, do I want that maintenance? So I do want that management. You probably will come out ahead if you're need for this is long-term to ultimately just buy things over than rent them. But I think the one thing that I would want to communicate, because I feel pretty strongly about this, is not to think of renting as just simply a cost to you. Like, I'm just throwing my money away. I'm not getting anything for it. And I mean, there is a cost there, but there's a lot of homeownership aspects too that are costly too. It's plenty leaky in your finances where you lose money on that deal. And so it's not like you're not losing money with homeownership either.
Correct. And I will say that one opinion, and it may not be the most popular one, but from a retirement distribution standpoint, the equity in your home is somewhat stated as being the worst, you know, asset class on your balance sheet. And it's usually the last thing that we spend down as retirees, right? When you think about it, because we're usually spending our variable buckets, right? Our investment buckets, any sort of guaranteed income that we might have, or even liquidity that we have on the books. All that's getting spent down. And then it's like, okay, well, the last thing I could do is sell my home. And that equity is really not growing at the same rate as some of the other buckets within your retirement distribution strategy. So completely different topic for a different day. But there is a time and place for ownership. But I often bring up, it is okay to rent. Don't view it as a wasted cost if the outcome benefits your goals and objectives. If you need to save a little bit more for a larger down payment to get the monthly payment in alignment with where you feel most comfortable to still save adequately for the future, then it's okay to rent, especially if it's affordable. if you have uncertainties about how long you're going to be residing in a certain location, geographical location based on job, it's okay to rent. And a lot of times, depending on where you're at in your career, you might have roommates, which means your cost is going to be a fraction of what it would be to own a home anyways. It's not as cut and dry as saying one's good and one's bad, one's a waste and one offers you, you know, graces and blessings in the future. But with ownership, you then have control and flexibility of whether you retain it or whether you sell it and take the proceeds and put it into something different. When you solely rent something, you forego that control and you are then at the discretion of whoever owns it. So that's where, you know, you also have to take that into account as well. Is do you want the flexibility of having the control, or are you okay giving up the control and flexibility to somebody else based on whatever your lifestyle desires and needs are at this current moment?
Yeah, I think this, I'm going to use that, Mike, as a good segue for what I'd like to talk about next, which is whether or not to think of a home purchase as a good investment. And one of the challenges I think that do take place when you choose to buy a home rather than rent is the natural tendency of people is not just simply to have that mortgage payment and cover that cost, or maybe they start in the property and they live in it, but as they settle and they nest in it, very commonly more money is going into the property. You know, we got to rehab the kitchen. Bathrooms aren't quite up to snuff. I'd like to have another garage, or let's redo the backyard. We need to maybe just do an expansion. There's just all these things where it's like, if you were renting this place, you'd be like, well, why would I improve the property? Right. It's meeting my needs, you know? But homeownership now, all this thing can become this really leaky proposition, because I don't know of anybody who owns a home and doesn't immediately start thinking about all the things they could do to it to make it better. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but we do have to kind of factor that into the cost. And it does come into the play of, is a home an investment or is it a consumption item? You know, is this a means by which we make money, or is it a reason for us to spend money? I'm kind of curious, what are your thoughts on that? Is a home an investment?
So the term investment could be used loosely, right? Because it's either going to be an investment of your time, investment of your money, or it's going to be an investment return based on how it's being utilized and viewed from that perspective, in my opinion. I think it is an investment in the sense that there's going to be upkeep, there's going to be maintenance, and you're going to be paying into this thing, assuming that you want to own it for an extended period of time. Now, there was a stat that came out within the last 2 or 3 years that mentioned that most individuals will live in about 13 different homes over their lifetime, not taking into account, you know, like dorms or apartments while in college, right? You know, we've been programmed over the course of the last, 2 to 3 decades to just be nomadic in nature with consumption, right? Every 1.5 to 2 years, everyone's flipping their phones to the newest model. Every 3 to 5 years, it looks like people are moving either for job opportunities or wanting to get into a bigger home. Some of that's just based on needing to expand and grow. Others might be, hey, this first home was kind of a stepping stone into our forever home. I loosely use forever home with clients because I know based on where they're at in their life, it's probably not going to be a forever home. And I bring that realization up because they don't need to get caught up into what's my interest rate over a 30-year fixed mortgage. Well, if you're not going to be living in the home for 30 years, the interest rate's really not that big of a variable in my opinion, because you're not going to be there to pay the mortgage off. Now, it definitely plays a factor in what your monthly cash flow is going to be. So, you know, whether or not it's an investment, I definitely think you could view it as an investment, but I wouldn't hold it at the same degree of, say, like your IRA being invested in some sort of stock-based fund, right? I don't think it's that same level of investment unless it's producing passive income. In that case, it is an investment, right? Because it's producing something for you.
I was just going to say that classically, investments are seen as the future appreciation of an asset due to the future cash flows that asset's producing for us. And so home ownership, unless you're renting or having some sort of a rental arrangement or have plans to turn it into a rental property, like what's the cash flow? Like it's not bringing money home. It's not producing income for you even before expenses. So if anything, it's more of a one-way street where we are building up equity in the property because we're slowly paying that mortgage down and the property is also appreciating in value. And so, you know, when you go to let go of the asset, you will hopefully have a net sum of money left behind, even after you include your down payment. So it's an investment in that you'll have something when you walk away from the property versus a rental arrangement. You get, you walk away from that and you don't have anything. Oh, you have even just memories. So it's an investment in that we potentially would hope to get some cash out of the deal. But it's also, I mean, just we're retrieving in a lot of ways just what we paid out in those mortgage payments over time. You know, if we were to factor in just that cost, it's like, how much of a real return am I getting on my money? At best, it's probably just a return of capital. you know, depending on where you're at and where you're living, whether or not I would see your home as an investment would probably really depend speculatively on that real estate market and just how much do we think your home value might spring up in the coming years. You know, I've seen firsthand where home values have increased enormously in just a few years. Some of this was folks were buying in at the bottom of the real estate market in 2012. And then just a few years later in 2016, 2017, stepping out of that. And, you know, they had as much as $1 million home appreciation in the course of that 4 to 5 years. And so typically my advice would be, you know, if you're only going to be in a property for a couple of years, you don't want to move forward. But very much in that circumstance, that obviously worked out really well for them. So, but what
timing, right?
What do you yeah, that was great timing. Yeah, you can't. Oh, yeah, I made $1 million. You know, a lot of that's coming home to you. You got the Section 121 exclusion and first 500,000 is non-taxable. And it's like, yeah, that was a good deal. You know, I mean, it's hard to, you know, that was money well spent. But yeah, home appreciation, maybe they just talk about that a little bit before we segue into the rent versus buy analysis. Mike, what do you think is a realistic home appreciation? Because that's not going to happen. What I just illustrated, someone making $1 million on their home in the course of 4 or 5 years, that's probably not going to happen. So what is realistic appreciation values in your mind?
Yeah. Again, this is where with financial planning, you can use any variable you want, right? You can be as conservative or as aggressive as you want to. And we're clearly not real estate specialists, right? We're not realtors. We're not mortgage lenders. We don't hold ourselves out there as investment property or investment real estate specialists or anything like that. So I like to be more on the conservative side, using anything between like a 3.5 to maybe 5% growth rate, right? And at 5 being more on the aggressive side. You know, if there's any listeners that's in that occupation or in that sector, they might be scoffing at that, right? But again, I would rather be conservative, because if the projections work with a conservative outcome, just think about how it's going to work if it's more aggressive than that, or if the growth is higher. So I think that's reasonable, right? I think you could be safe with about 4%. Now, there's obviously going to be pockets of time over history where there's an exception to the rule, right? You go back to 2008, I think home prices dropped 11%, if not more. You go back to the COVID years and homes appreciated probably over 15, 16% over a 1 to 2 year period of time. And then you also have to take into account just supply and demand, right? When the supply chain took a hit, that really put a strain on supply and demand to where people were able to ask higher for their homes because there was no inventory available and people needed to buy homes either due to relocation or just expansion, and they were willing to pay that price.
I mean, a lot of what undergrids, maybe to just follow up with that, Mike, home appreciation is just the inflation of the materials that it take to produce the home itself, right? And so if timber and insulation and drywall and shingle materials are all increasing in value due to shortages in the economy, which is what we did see largely in COVID, with supply chains being affected, not necessarily supply and demand. I mean, it's both things, but that specifically was within supply chains, then we could expect your home to appreciate. But I think the undergirding thing that's worthwhile in all of this is population growth and control and the demand, ongoing demand for real estate. Because as much as home values will appreciate, when we talk about that, it's a combination of land value and the property or the building in question. And sometimes I know people will talk, especially if you're out of the Midwest and you're looking out on the coastal arrangements and you're like, I can't believe someone would spend $1 million for a shack. And it's like, okay, yeah, I suppose they spent $1 million for a property that has a shack on it, but they didn't really spend $1 million for the shack. They spent $900,000 for the land that the shack sits on. It's really just $100,000. And so that's the other piece to this, is not so much just property increasing and the building costs associated with it, but what's that land value? And are you living maybe in a really desirable area or neighborhood? And do we think there's going to be continued demand and interest as we have either expanding interest on a global level or at least more interest specifically to your local market of people moving in? It's a desirable area that's going to push that home value up further because more people are interested in that property. So I think those are all the things that are coming into play with capital appreciation. And I don't know. I don't know if I would buy a property just for that alone. Would you buy a property just because you're thinking it's going to increase in value?
No. And again, that might be based on my bias, right? And I think some of that just has to deal with recency bias or even just where you feel most confident. It's no different with, I would say, most financial planners or investment wealth management advisors probably feel more confident in owning investments that are correlated to the stock market as opposed to owning real estate. Whereas realtors and mortgage lenders probably feel more confident and adamant about owning real estate to generate passive income as opposed to being invested in the stock market. I personally wouldn't, but that's just my personal opinion.
Sure. It feels too speculative to me. I mean, at the end of the day, I think if you want to ask me, you know, what do I think? I think home ownership is a consumption item. Hopefully we see a good positive return on it. I think there's reason to think there will be a positive return, but I also think there's a lot of rationalization to turn around and say my home's an investment. It's probably not, actually. It's really probably just a reason for you to spend more money. So
yeah. Well, and in my mind, it comes back to the purpose of it, right? Like, what is the purpose and the objective tied to this purchase or to the utilization of this? And I think that will help consumers hopefully be able to determine, well, is this an investment or is it a consumption? What are the means, right? By the graces of God, my home that we live in is to protect my family from the elements, to provide us with, you know, a place to praise him, to make memories together, to host families, to have dinners, like all these different things, right? If I can make money off of it in the meantime while I'm living there, while my kids are drawing on the walls, then why not?
Smart financial decision. Yeah, we got to have our kids give plenty of room for artwork, right? Yeah, let them terrorize the place and everything. Well, good. Well, what I'd like to pivot to is just kind of this decision of like, well, should someone buy in the current market? And so what I'm going to do for everyone, you won't be able to see this quite in the audio, but if you do pay attention to it, you're listening to this on our YouTube channel, you can find the show there. We're going to, you can see the presentation of the details of this rent versus buy calculator with the New York Times. Yes, as we make a pivot here too, you know, folks, if you're maybe in a position where you're not quite sure what to do and you're looking for help, and you know, we're going to give you this handy calculator. If it's available, it's for free. You can go and check it out anytime. But you know, these are big, important considerations. You know, maybe this is something it's worth reaching out to a financial advisor about. You know, we've got a good number of them with the Catholic Financial Planners Network. Go ahead and give that some thought. Reach out to one of us and see if we can't give you some sound guidance on what to do in your particular situation. So again, we'll hope to make the audio here as lively as possible, but would recommend anyone who's paying attention to catch the video too, if they can. I love this calculator. Again, it's with the New York Times. Just Google search New York Times rent. Is it better to rent or buy? It'll pull it up right away. Did you have some immediate takeaways with this, Mike, with some of your thoughts? Perhaps I'll leave you to introduce the calculator some.
Yeah. So my immediate thought is that if I'm a consumer that probably on a scale of 1 to 10 has a confidence level of maybe 5 for my personal finances, this calculator is got way too many variables that might be over my head, right? And it may create more anxiety and stress. I think for someone who's very driven by data, technical, and wants to delve into the weeds of trying to calculate this on their own, I think it could be beneficial or helpful. But I think if I'm just normal consumer, this is going to create more questions and concerns for me than anything else. It's great. I like it. I'm a data geek, so I like it. But you know, everyone's personality is different. So forewarning, I guess.
Well, there you go. There's just a plug even more for you. Go work with a financial advisor, folks, here. And so they can geek out on this and you can just find out what you should do. So, well, we're trying to bring home this question as we've been talking about, should I rent? Should I buy? And a lot of that comes down to is like, well, what's available to you in inventory on the rental side? And then what's available to you in inventory on the home purchase side? And I think really maybe to drive home the point, what I love about this calculator is it starts to highlight in certain ways where buying a home would not be advantageous for you. And some of this has to be, well, what's the out-of-pocket? What would you have to pay to acquire a home? You know, what's that cost to you? How long do you plan to stay in the home? You know, what's the prevailing interest rate? And then also, what do you have available for a down payment for the property? Really, a lot of sensitivity. You'll see this if you look at the calculator. Two questions that, you know, we have been hitting upon about how long do you plan to stay in the home? How much do you have to pay to get one that's comparable to what you're paying for rent? And then again, that rate really would adjust and affect things. You know, other things that could be really impactful that, again, this calculator is going to really do a good job, I think, of highlighting would be how much you think the home may appreciate in value. The more of it we think it would appreciate in value, the more things are going to lean towards homeownership being a better return. But I think what's equally interesting and whether or not this would actually be executed upon is, you know, if you didn't buy the home and you use that down payment for some other purpose and instead you just continued to rent, you know, what kind of return could we be getting on that money? You know, what's your opportunity cost, as we like to call it? And the more you could get a better return for that money, the more of it you're probably better off, you know, just renting. So that's a pretty big one. Like, what could you be doing with this money other than buying a home with? You know, again, the typical capital appreciation in a home, at least in terms of what we think that home value is going to increase by, could be as low as 3%, maybe 5.5%, really depends on your locale. And it's probably not going to generate 7 to 10%, right? Where we might hope to get that as a return and other aspects of finance. Do you have anything else that kind of stands out in your mind with some of the big movers or shakers with this calculator?
The only other one that I would say is somewhat impactful is really that marginal rate from a tax perspective, right? Like just understanding what your marginal rate is, being aware of that, how that's going to play into things from figuring out what's realistic or not. And then maintenance fees, right? I mean, some people move into new construction with very minimal maintenance fees, warranties out the wazoo for the first couple of years, whereas others are buying homes that have been pre-existing for decades that the HVAC goes out after 8 to 10 to 12 years, right? Whatever the life of that is and how it's been maintenance and managed. So to say 1%, I would say it's really dependent, but you highlighted, I would say, what are probably the most important variables. And I'd say the most important one's probably time horizon. That's a huge factor because the shorter your time horizon, as far as expected time in that property, the higher amount of, what is it, monthly rent?
Well, yeah, it would start to push that monthly rent higher up. Yeah.
Yeah. So the break even is going to be, I'd say, harder to hit if it's a shorter period of time. And again, quoting what I mentioned earlier, usually that break even point is going to be somewhere between 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. Well, and if you look at this calculator, it kind of shades out into the future, the curvature of where things plateau. And you'll see that for the most part, once you get into that 7 to 10 year range, homeownership above and beyond that, yeah, you'll have come out ahead. It's really questionable in the first 3-5 years. I mean, we have just seen this in our own local neighborhood where people move in, they stay for just a year or two and they move back out. And every time I see that, I'm just like, gosh, that's just a shame. I mean, I wish I could have talked to them before they bought that house, but they're almost certainly losing money on that deal. Or it's questionable, right? As to if they came out ahead at all. If you're just thinking you're going to own this home for 2 years, folks, like we should really just rent, like for so many reasons. So expect for at least 3 to 5 years, and it could be as long as 7 to 10, to kind of depending on your area. So, and that marginal tax rate, some people like to tout like the tax benefits of home ownership, you know, at least under current tax law with the higher standard deduction. Truth is, a lot of people aren't itemizing, so they're not really able to get that mortgage interest rate deduction, at least on the federal. Some states are providing still tax benefits, so you might pick it up on the state side.
Some of that might also be like geographical as well. Like you think of someone who lives in California who's got already out of the box a higher mortgage, right? Yeah. And then you're throwing on a 7% interest rate. They might pay it enough to get them over the standard deduction and interest in that given year versus someone who lives in North Carolina.
Yeah, I would say so. There's a number of things that go into play with that on the tax side because, you know, I mean, as these property values are higher, your income has to be higher naturally just to be able to afford the payment. And then that means you have higher AGI only showing up, adjusted gross income on the tax return. It also usually means you've got higher property or estate taxes if you're getting taxed on your taxable income, which most states do, which then goes into the itemized deduction along with property taxes. So it's like the combination of that mortgage interest and the higher taxes altogether, really the two of those put it pretty strongly that you're going to be itemizing in those situations. I think so. One last question. We haven't really got into that and I don't want to forget about it. So this calculator, folks, is really good. What I do want to play out is just one scenario of just like, what would maybe this look like and try to help you figure it through. But we haven't really touched upon the question of affordability. Mike, could you just maybe give 2 minutes? Like, what's your criteria in determining, even if you could afford a property, when does it get to be too much for somebody where it's probably you're paying more than what you should be for your finances? Like how are you figuring that out as you look at client situations?
So as a certified financial planner, I lean on, you know, some of the guidelines or general rules of thumb that they provide us through our training and education, right? And they promote principal interest taxes and insurance not exceeding 28% of household gross income. I, on the other hand, look at just principal and interest because property tax rates change, insurance rates change depending on geographical location. So I encourage clients and I say, hey, you know, two rules of thumb here that we can look at. One, principal and interest shouldn't be more than 15 to 20% of your annual gross income. On the other side, if we're going to look at principal interest taxes and insurance, then no more than 28% of your annual gross income. Okay. And then that at least gives us an idea of, well, how much home can we afford per se per month, right? Monthly mortgage payment. And then we can then look at, okay, well, what are the other variables around is purchasing power? Where are interest rates? What are home prices? There's really two ways to be able to get into the home. One, you can provide a larger down payment to then get into that financed amount that you need in order to stay within your monthly budget, or you can reduce the purchase price of the home and look elsewhere. right? Those are kind of the two main levers you could look at, barring purchasing power with interest rates. So for me, I'm using those two variables, again, 15 to 18 or 15 to 20% of annual gross income with principal and interest only, or principal, interest, taxes, and insurance at 28% of household gross income.
Yes, and I think some of this really might start to harken back to, is your home a good investment? And even just because maybe you can afford it and you've got the cash flow to be able to stretch yourself and get it. And let's say even this calculator goes and says, hey, actually, for given your rental situation, maybe a homeownership isn't a bad deal. It's still a question of like, am I just putting too much of my cash flow into a single item and forcing myself to spend? It goes back to that consumption item. Am I just spending too much on my living needs? And does that need to get recharacterized? So even if this is still working between that rent versus buy calculation, let's not forget about the affordability question and ultimately just not putting too much of our money towards, you know, supplying ourselves for a place to live. But I do want to just give a few comments here. And I know then we have to close it up. Hopefully it's been a great conversation for everybody. I love this topic, and you guys have captured a few things from it for sure. Just the highlights on this, the rent versus buy calculation, if you get a chance to look at this calculator, the question really here comes back to, you know, which is better? Should I rent or should I buy? And, you know, what's available to me in the rental inventory? And so, you know, with the numbers that we have, let's say you have a home, the ability to afford a home of $430,000. Maybe you plan to stay in it for 5 years or so. Got a mortgage rate of 7% and a 10% down payment. And then there's a number of other things that you could adjust, but those are really the big ones as we've been chatting about. Like that decision of which way am I going to, is this going to work? It's, well, could I find a rental property according to this calculator? Not a rental property, but a rental that is $2,200 per month or less that meets my needs. If I could find a rental that is less than $2,200 a month that meets my needs, then that, given really the amount of time that you'd be plan to be in the home, that can be the better way to go. That's at least how this calculator is reading. Versus on the other hand, if I could find a home that meets my needs, that meets these parameters, again, $430,000 purchase price, 10% down, 7% mortgage rate, staying in the home for 5 years and living in or having a mortgage of 30 years. If I could find a home that meets my needs for this and the rental cost to me or this amount of $2,200 or more, then homeownership now is going to be more favorable or advantageous. And so I wouldn't want to put too much weight in this calculator. I don't think it should be the deciding factor in this consideration, but I do find it helpful. I think maybe just as we wrap this up, Mike, what are your thoughts as we kind of think through, you know, these considerations?
Yeah, no, I definitely think it's helpful in painting a picture, right, for whoever's using it. I will say calculators are only as smart as the individual who's putting in the inputs, right? So, I mean, you make a mistake somewhere and overlook something, you could definitely be sending yourself on a wild goose chase or get your hopes up or create some devastation for yourself. But I think it's a great baseline to then start the conversation of, okay, well, one, is it realistic to think in my area that I can find somewhere to rent at $2,200 a month versus, do we plan on being in this geographical location for more than 5 years? Because again, in this scenario, we're using a 5-year time horizon, right? Now, the asterisk by the time horizon is then, okay, well, if I am forced to move, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, what are then the additional variables that come into play with, you know, relocation funding or sign-on bonuses if it's for a job, or, you know, do I want to be a landlord and rent this out? And do I have the means to then turn around and purchase another property? Or then do I go rent in a different location, right? So, you know, there's variables out the wazoo that we get to play devil's advocate around, which is why speaking with a financial planning professional could benefit you in just having somebody play the devil's advocate or being overly objective for you and looking at all the scenarios and being able to find that balance between what's reasonable and what's rational. Again, homeownership isn't for everybody. Renting long-term isn't for everybody. It really comes down to, in my personal opinion, what is the overall objective and goal at hand? And are we aligning our cash flow with that to put us in the best possible position to achieve that goal, check it off, take the next step towards whatever our financial future holds for us?
I think that's just great, Mike. I mean, that's really spot on. And I, you know, the last thought I would have to add to that is, look, you know, this isn't probably the deciding factor in your finances, right? I mean, it's a big decision. We shouldn't take it too lightly. But truth is if you chose to rent your whole life and it probably wasn't as advantageous as homeownership, is this one of the reasons why your finances didn't meet your long-term objectives? It probably is not the end of the world. So, I mean, it's fun to think about, you know, let's be thoughtful. Let's make good use of our money. But the truth is you probably could go either way on this, and it's not endless. It could, homeownership has more risk in my opinion. So I'm a little more hesitant about just say, like, just buy a house if you want to. But, you know, renting long-term is, if ultimately that's what you offer to it, even if you could have come better out with homeownership, I think you'll still be fine. Let's not fret over it too much.
Well, and I think one thing that's been ingrained in us for so long is that homeownership is a component of the American dream. And that's probably a conversation for another day, but people take that into account, right? So you have people who graduate from college, they rent for a couple of years, maybe a decade, they get married, they start a family, and usually somewhere in that period of time, they're wanting to purchase a home. And they think that's kind of what the next phase of life entails. They may or may not be prepared to do that, but that's why there are professionals out there that they can vet to say, hey, if this is a goal that I have, or if I'm conflicted between whether or not I should be looking to buy versus renting because my coworkers or relatives are telling me that I'm wasting money, have a conversation with someone that you can trust. Allow them to collect the data and provide you with an analysis that's taking into account the opportunity cost, the technical analysis, as well as just the alignment of what your goals and objectives are.
Well, there you go, man. Let's hook up folks, meet up, reach out to the Catholic Financial Planners Network. You know, Mike has said it there. I do think as we bring this to an end, Mike, is we need to have another episode to go and talk about whether or not to convert your primary residence into a rental property when you move. We haven't really talked about that, and we just got a teaser there for you folks. We'll have to circle back to that conversation. I'm sure that's top of mind for a lot of you. So just keep tuning in. We'll have more relevant content coming your way. So in the meantime, God's blessings to everyone. Thanks for tuning in, listening to us. And we hope that this episode has been valuable and worth your time. Take care. God bless.
Thank you. God bless.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as tax, legal, or investment advice. Although the information has been gathered from sources believed to be reliable, please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information should be relied upon only when coordinated with individual professional advice. Guest speakers and their firms are not affiliated with or endorsed by Park Avenue Securities, Guardian, Genesis Wealth Planning, LLC, or Consolidated Planning, Inc., and opinions stated are their own. Guardian, its subsidiaries, agents, and employees do not provide tax, legal, or accounting advice. Consult your tax, legal, or accounting professional regarding your individual situation. All investments and investment strategies contain risk and may lose value. Michael Acosta is a registered representative and financial advisor of Park Avenue Securities, LLC. OSJ 6115 Park South Drive, Suite 200, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28210, 704-552-8507. Securities products and advisory services offered through Park Avenue Securities, member, FINRA, SIPC, financial representative of the Guardian Life Insurance Company of America, Guardian, New York, New York. Park Avenue Securities is a wholly owned subsidiary of Guardian. Genesis Wealth Planning, LLC and Consolidated Planning, Inc. are not an affiliate or subsidiary of Park Avenue Securities or Guardian. California Insurance License Number 0M50974-2024-170298, expiration 326.